honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. As you wind down from Christmas 2020, as you write all those thank you notes and clean things up and try to look forward to what 2021 might hold, we are looking back to Christmas's past and some of the things our World War II veterans went through. Years ago, we met Leonard Cosby on this program, and so many of you send in your accounts of when and where you met Leonard. The podcast of his episode is one of the most frequently accessed at hometownheroesradio.com, but we're going to hear just a little piece of his story today. And maybe think about what you were doing this Christmas Eve as we hear about what he experienced on Christmas Eve 1944, when, as part of the 80th Infantry Division, he was manning a roadblock on the perimeter of the Battle of the Bulge.
Some German soldiers sneaked up and started shooting at us. They couldn't get a direct shot into where we were, so they were shooting at an angle. And on our right side was a wooden, kind of like a garage where they had parked something inside the garage. This German was shooting at us. They had some tracer bullets in with their ammunition, and the tracer bullet would hit the side of this wooden garage and stick there and fry. They didn't last long, just a few seconds, and they went out. That was the only time they came up there attempting to shoot us or shoot at us. And to this day, I can't understand why they didn't throw a hand grenade or something in there at us.
You're not complaining that they didn't?
Oh, no. No, fortunately, I made it through it in fine shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's additional vehicles coming up the road, so we had two bazooka shells. We had already used one, so now it's time to use the other one. And I moved up on the ridge and loaded the bazooka gun and fired it. And when a bazooka shell hits metal, out the other side of the metal will be flying molting metal. And when I fired the bazooka gun, I could hear some German soldiers down there screaming and hollering. And after that, we didn't hear much of anything from them. There was no firing at us or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that must have been about, oh, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
And how many people are with you here?
There's three of us in that roadblock.
Three of us. So this is not a well-fortified position. You don't have a lot of reinforcements. You guys are out there on your own.
Right. And there's really not much of anything around us to protect us either.
And you have no idea how many Germans are out there?
No.
So it's 3 in the morning.
And one of the fellows became excited. And I guess he was a little bit hysterical. He said, boy, he said, we're going to have to do something. It's going to be daylight here before you know it. And when it gets light, the Germans are going to come in here and kill us all. He said, we're going to have to give up. And I said, well, that might be all right. But I said, who's going to walk out in the middle of the road to give up?
Mm-hmm.
And I was standing down near the front of our position there, and this guy just pushed me right out in the middle of the road. So I started yelling, comrade, comrade.
And this is about daybreak or what?
Well, I'd say it's about 3 o'clock or 3:30 in the morning.
So you didn't want to wait till the sun came up?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, he was afraid that they would come in there and tear us to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, I don't know why the Germans didn't start shooting, but they took all three of us as prisoners and took us down to a German officer who questioned us as to what organization we were in, what unit we were in, and how long we had been there.
Not very long.
No.
Didn't have much to tell them, did you? Not that you would have anyway.
No, but I'm sure they knew mm-hmm. the organization we were in, what division and all.
Emotionally, what was that like? Because here you have put in all this time and training, not to mention your brother going in with you, and you're going over there to win a war. And now all of a sudden, you've had this intense experience where you didn't know if you were going to die, and here you are surrendering not knowing what the future holds. That seems like an awful lot to try to process in a 19-year-old brain.
Well, I didn't know what to expect from the Germans or where they would take us, but they had us marching for a ways, and then they put us on a trucks and hauled us back into Germany.
Leonard Cosby, one of the dozens of ex-prisoners of war we've met on Hometown Heroes over the years, and one of many to have spent Christmas in captivity. No division had more men experience Christmas in captivity than the 106th Infantry Division, which had two of its three regiments overrun and surrounded at the start of the Battle of the Bulge. Mac McMullen was one of more than 6,000 of those Golden Lions of the 106th to be part of one of the largest mass surrenders in history.
We were captured late in the evening and marched down the hill. And they got a little town called Belief, B-E-L-I-E-F or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They congregated us there, put us in, called them, and so many breaths and started down there. Didn't stay a breath very long. It was just mass. At least see on the movies, you know, confusion.
And was there talk among your ranks of guys trying to go out on their own, make a break for it, avoid capture and captivity?
Not at that point. We weren't sure. We didn't know what we were doing. We mm-hmm. were just surrounded. That's the night I got my feet wet. I got both feet wet, and I didn't have combat boots because they didn't have my size. So I got the regular shoe, and I tried to go through a little stream whatever you jump across. I got both feet wet and got them frozen. Mm-hmm. And later on, as things went on, because we walked that particular time, we walked from the middle of that afternoon, all that night, all the next day, and then before we stopped. And by the time we got there, my feet were frozen. And I was at the point where I couldn't make anyone. And this is when I went to church and Sunday school and all that, but I was one of these guys that prayed for a bicycle or something like that. And I was holding back saving that, I guess. I didn't know it. But I prayed that just give me one more half mile. Just give me one more half mile. And then I got to where I was getting ready to drop out. And somebody I don't know, never saw him before. I've never seen him since. He was a big guy. He grabbed me by, put me on his shoulder or arm, and he helped me. And with him and some other help, I got there through the night and the next day. But that was tough because I couldn't. I was ready to drop out. I just couldn't go anymore.
And for our listeners, tell us what that would have meant if you would have dropped out. You would have been left for dead, or maybe
they might shoot me, or mm-hmm. to make sure I wasn't playing games with them, and so that they didn't. No, they did not have frozen. My feet were already frozen. I couldn't go anywhere.
You know? So you thought that was it?
Yep, that was as close as I've ever come.
And a desperate prayer was answered, and a big, strapping fellow American who.
Right.
And who knows? Who knows who he was, huh?
I don't know. Never saw him. It was in the middle of the night, and I didn't ask him. He saw me stumbling and heading for the edge of the column, and grabbed me and says, "Hang in there." And we, the two of us, stumbled along. You've seen it in the movies, and that's the way it is.
And I've had so many prisoners of war repeat to me the POW motto of "we help those who can't help themselves." And there was someone who helped mm-hmm. you when you couldn't help yourself. How many times over the years have you thought back to that when someone needed help from you?
I've been there.
Mm-hmm. And I can tell it's still powerful for you, and I certainly understand why. So you made it through that night.
We worked all that night, and then the next day, and then they finally let us start, give us a rest. Some of us were in a schoolhouse, some of us were in a church, a barn, whatever, because there wasn't any facilities. It was just where you could flop,
mm-hmm.
and we spent that night there. And then the next day, we were in a little town called Gerolstein, G-E-R-O-S-T-A-I-N, or something like that. and mm-hmm. they loaded it on boxcars at that time.
And this is the famous 40 and 8?
Mm-hmm.
40 people or 8 horses, but I'm sure they stuck a lot more than 40 in there.
60.
Uh-huh.
You couldn't, what you did, you sat down with your knees up, and then the guy got behind you and his back to yours were the same. And if you got into that position, everybody got in that position, you could all sit down at one time. Otherwise, you couldn't.
And you probably needed that for some body heat, too, right?
The heat came from the manure that was in the boxcar. There was about 8-10 inches of manure in the boxcar. And us city boys didn't know how many BTUs there were on a pound of horse manure. but it was because the next day, couple guys, when they would let us out to relieve ourselves, and,
sure.
and there was no water, so we'd be eating some snow, and a couple of them asked if they could shovel this stuff out, the manure out. Well, man, when that part where the car, where these jokers got rid of the manure, was frozen just like the...
Never thought you'd be wishing for horse manure.
No,
huh?
No.
And this sounds like a miserable existence. I mean, certainly the uncertainty could eat you alive, if not the freezing temperatures and just the agony of really not having any sustenance.
We hadn't eaten. When we got captured, we hadn't eaten for 2 days. They just had to bring the chow up to us because when we were by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Jeep didn't get there for 2 days before we were captured. Mm-hmm. So we still didn't have anything to eat until, well, I guess it would be the second day. They give us a loaf of bread for 5 guys, one of their brown breads that they make out of
sawdust. Tree flour.
Yeah.
So if you ever think one of those infamous Christmas fruitcakes is hard to stomach, imagine all those prisoners of war eating sawdust-filled bread for their Christmas dinners during World War II. We have one more veteran for you to hear from today, a man whose story we featured just last month on Hometown Heroes, but a Christmas memory that I have thought of every time since when I've heard the song Silent Night. Don Cooley was another one of those 106th Infantry Division soldiers captured in the early days of the Battle of the Bulge. He would spend Christmas and his birthday in one of those infamous 40-and-8 boxcars used to transport prisoners.
My job as a battalion clerk, I happen to have in my pocket another blank sheet called a morning report where you list the names of everybody. And so I passed this thing around the boxcar and had everyone sign it that was in there. I think there were 60 of us then. The third day we were strafed because the boxcars were not labeled. And these were, we think, British plays. So they opened the doors and we got out to dive in the ditch. Yeah, it was cold by then. But the point I want to make is that they did run along this long train, and open up the doors when the strafing occurred. The trouble is, strafing's over before they could get to 2 or 3 cars.
And when you say these boxcars aren't labeled, what you're saying is they had said POW on the top.
Red Cross. Yeah.
Then the planes would have known not to shoot.
Yeah, that's right.
But they don't know.
They don't know.
And so you guys are helpless inside this boxcar, and if they don't open the doors, you're going to have a lot of guys die.
That's right, or you hope that pilot is a bad shot. Some guys took off at that point and didn't come back to the boxcar.
Did you think about trying that?
Not a bit.
Why not?
Well, I think it was because if I had thought about it, I think I would have nixed it because I think it was the fourth day into Germany, third or fourth. That's a pretty long way to get back through the lines.
So you knew.
And no food.
And wherever you're going to be, it's German-held territory. So the likelihood of you getting through all that and back to American territory is rough. And are you getting pretty hungry by now?
Yes.
Are you getting scared?
No, I don't think so. We were with friends. That helped so much.
Well, and you said you celebrated your 21st birthday in a boxcar. I don't think that's how most young men imagine spending their 21st birthday.
Well, I wouldn't interview very many people with that question, but I think I know the answer, so I don't need to.
Did it occur to you that it was your birthday? Did you mark the occasion?
Oh, sure. The day after Christmas.
Well, I guess I should ask you about Christmas, too, then, huh?
Well, there was a significant thing. We started singing Christmas carols in the boxcar, and I get emotional about that. There was another fellow among our group, had a good voice and knew the words. But pretty soon other people chimed in. And the irony, of course, is that that's a German carol, Silent Night.
So you're somewhere in Germany, you're prisoners in a boxcar, freezing and starving.
Well, we weren't freezing in there. From that standpoint, we were better off than the soldiers that didn't get caught. It got down to the coldest winter to date there in Germany, and we were sheltered. And that was something to be thankful for.
But here you are, 60 GIs, singing Silent Night inside a boxcar?
Yeah. Well, it was Christmas.
How did it sound?
They didn't sing happy birthday to me the next day, but I don't think I told them anyway. They might have. You know, what do you do? You're just there all day sitting on your duff and chatting. Because we were in that boxcar for 9 days.
Well, and I imagine you've probably heard Silent Night hundreds of times in the 75 years since then.
Sure. Wonderful song.
Can you listen to it now without thinking of that boxcar on Christmas 1944?
No.
And what do you think about when your mind goes back to that moment with those
guys?
Oh,
I cloud up.
You might be the only one from that boxcar who's still here.
It's very possible.
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth or make it more than it was, but I can sense just from your description and your emotion that this was a real powerful moment for you.
Oh, yes.
What did it do for you?
Made me feel better, probably.
Gave you a little sliver
and
of hope.
And also, it was another bond with the others that were singing with us, which we needed at that time.
They definitely needed that at that time, and maybe some of us could use something like that at this time. Earlier, we talked about Bing Crosby's White Christmas and what it turned into for two heavy-hearted veterans. We're going to wrap up this special edition of Hometown Heroes with another Bing Crosby record. As we look forward with hope to 2021, we can also pray for the peace reflected in the last lines of that 200-year-old carol, Silent Night.
In heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.